Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, April 22nd, 5:26 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are mixed this morning. May corn futures unchanged at 4:33 and a half. May soybeans down 1 3/4 at 11:48 3/4. May Chicago wheat up 5 at 5:55 1/4. May Kansas City wheat up 5 1/4 at 5:86 3/4. May spring wheat down 2 at 6:45. Let's start off with U.S. weather and planting conditions.
Rainfall across the U.S. Corn Belt will be limited for the next 3 to 4 days. Rain is slated to return on Thursday or Friday. During the 5 to 10 day period, big chunks of the Western Corn Belt, along with areas of Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan, may see 1 to 3 inches of rain accumulate. Large amounts may be observed locally. Iowa, in particular, has been drought-stricken for months. The pattern appears to be changing in real time following recent rains and a wet forecast. Below normal temperatures are expected to be a trend in the Eastern Corn Belt this week.
You got another 3 or 4 days of dryish weather, but a lot of these areas, especially in the east, have been really wet. And also out east, it's going to be well below normal in terms of temperatures this week, which could hinder any planting activity. So if you're not wet, maybe you'll make some progress this week. Maybe you made some progress over the weekend. If you've been wet and now it's going to be colder and you've got rains coming back in, maybe you're going to be delayed a little bit. When you look at the amounts that are expected for Iowa, for Minnesota, Wisconsin, Western Illinois, Missouri, these are pretty substantial. There are some pockets, and these would be like the driest parts of Iowa. The Euro says 4 to 5 inches of rain in total over the next 10 days. That's probably a little excessive, but you can see the trend here. The drought pattern in the Western Corn Belt appears to be very much changing in real time. If you guys have planting updates, let me know. I'll be very curious to see the crop progress numbers this afternoon. If you think that this window that we've got coming up this next 3 or 4 days, if that's not enough to dry out and be where you need to be, let me know. If you're going to make some progress the next 3 or 4 days, let me know. I'll be very curious to see what you guys think. Looking at the southern plains, there are some chances here for rains across HRW wheat country in Kansas and surrounding areas, but a lot of that's in the 5 to 10. And even in the 5 to 10, it looks kind of scattered here. So that's far from a guarantee. You know, the 5-day forecast is pretty good. Anything beyond that becomes a little bit less reliable. So we hope that those rains hit in Kansas and some of those surrounding areas, HRW wheat areas, but far from a guarantee, I'd say.
Brazilian corn and soybeans continue to dominate the Chinese market. During March, China imported 2.2 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans, which is 50% less than last year. Over half of China's total soybean imports last month came from Brazilian beans, which saw an 81% increase to 3.3 million metric tons. Total Chinese soybean imports during March fell to a four-year low of 5.5 million metric tons due to high prices and reduced feed demand from the livestock sector. Chinese imports of Brazilian corn also surged during March, increasing 72% to 1.2 million metric tons and accounting for almost 71% of total corn imports for the month. U.S. corn imports, meanwhile, declined by 78% to 109,685 metric tons.
This is not a good look, but it's not surprising either. We know that the U.S. export window gets shorter by the year as Brazilian production gets bigger the way that it looks. When it comes to soybeans, China has still been the largest buyer, bar none, way above anybody else. They've got almost 24 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans on the books this year. Mexico would be the second biggest at 4.4 million. So China's still by far the largest buyer of U.S. soybeans, although they're starting to shift more from the United States to Brazil, and that's going to be a trend. China has no new crop U.S. soybean sales on the books at this time of year, and this is the first time for this time of the year that they haven't had anything on the books for new crop in at least 10 years. Usually they've always got at least something. I would imagine, if I had to guess, you're going to start to see some new crop business accumulate over the next few weeks. Not a guarantee. There's no guarantees here, and it's highly variable. I mean, you look at some of these years, like 2022, by this time of the year, they already had 6.5 million on the books, but then you go back to 2020 or 2019, and they had nothing. And a lot of that was trade war type year. Last year, they had less than a million. So I guess it's unprecedented-ish that they have zero new crop sales on the books, or purchases rather, but I think they're probably coming. It just may be in a smaller dose.
So if you guys have not checked out our premium content, you sure need to do so. Joe, can you tell me about some videos you put together last week?
There are a lot of questions about fuel needs. Should I lock up fuel needs? I think there's concern about rising crude prices, about the situation in the Middle East. I ran this from a couple different angles, like the technical, a chart angle, then the farm budget angle, then like the peace of mind angle. There's a few different ways you can look at this. On Friday, we did Social Media Circus, and Mackenzie, our picture and podcast appeared in one of the less savory places on the internet. But you know what? Any publicity is good publicity. We talked about that a little bit. We talked in detail about the, I'll put this in air quotes, the conspiracy to lower commodity prices as it relates to an election year and what's going on right now and why that's probably not the best theory that there is, at least in my view. Everybody's got their own opinion, whatever. If you guys want to see the premium stuff, go to standardgrain.com this morning. We send an email out every single business day at 5 a.m. Central Time. That email includes our 6 most recent premium videos. We do a new premium video every single business day. All sorts of charts, all of our grain marketing recommendations. This is a super transparent way to track grain marketing if you're looking for something a little bit simpler. This is also the best way to support what we're doing here. If you like YouTube, if you like the podcast, you love the premium stuff, I promise. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have any corporate backing. So the premium subs are what allow us to do this every single business day. Support independent media, guys. $50 a month, cancel at any time. No other fee, no other obligation. Nobody will try to sell you anything else. If you guys are busy this week or this morning, you can sign up on your phone. It takes about 2 seconds. We do Apple Pay and Google Pay and credit cards. It's a piece of cake. So check that deal out.
Fund traders continue to hold a historically large net short position across the grain complex. CFTC released weekly commitment of traders data on Friday. During the week ending April 16th, the funds were net sellers of 16,000 contracts of corn. The net short of 272,000 contracts remains historically large. Funds were net sellers of 29,000 contracts of soybeans. The net short of 156,000 contracts is historically large also. And the funds were net sellers of 10,000 contracts of SRW wheat on the week.
Across these three contracts, corn, soybeans, SRW wheat, funds were net sellers of 55,000 contracts. So the net short across those three contracts of 523,000, that's almost the biggest we've seen this year. The largest we saw this year was 527 from several weeks ago. So we're almost, the funds are almost as bearish the markets as they've been this calendar year, which is not a good look. And as I've discussed in the past, the funds and fund traders, large speculators, they're not the reason that corn went from 6 to 4. They're a symptom. What's going on here is a symptom. And can they move the markets a little bit? Yeah. Do they result in increased volatility because of the way they trade? Yeah. Sometimes they push the market maybe a little bit further than it should go, but they follow the trend, and they're following the trend here, which is clearly a bear trend in these markets.
On Saturday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a $95 billion foreign aid package. The package includes nearly $61 billion for Ukraine and more than $26 billion for Israel. It also includes about $8 billion to help Taiwan fight off Chinese aggression. The Senate is expected to vote on and pass the bill this week. House Speaker Mike Johnson disregarded requests to include U.S. border legislation in order to get the bill passed. Also, on Saturday, the House approved a bill that would ban the use of TikTok in the U.S. unless its Chinese-controlled parent company, ByteDance, divests itself from the app.
Did you see the video or the picture where they're waving the Ukraine flags?
I did.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I don't know what country we live in. Whatever. Politics aside, I mean, the general public is becoming less and less enthusiastic about all of this foreign aid, especially as everybody just paid taxes and whatever. You guys can argue about that in the comments if you want. As it relates to markets, there is some concern that, you know, if this thing in the Middle East continues and continues, that you're going to see rising crude prices and as a result, more inflation. And maybe it would be helpful to some commodities. That being said, the commodity rally that had been going on for a few weeks has stalled the last 2 weeks. The Bloomberg index was lower last week. It's lower to start this week. The energies aren't doing much to start off the week here. So for the moment, things have kind of stalled. But if this crude rally were to continue and if some of this spending results in increased conflict, then yeah, it could rally crude. And that may ultimately lead to some short covering in the grains. We're just not to that point yet.
So we had a cattle on feed report come out on Friday. Cattle on feed as of April 1st were reported at 101% of year ago levels, which was slightly lower than the anticipated 102%. Placements in March were reported at 88% of year ago levels, significantly lower than the pre-report average estimate of 92%. Marketings last month were 86% of year ago levels, lower than the pre-report estimate of 88%. The report is considered neutral to somewhat friendly, considering placements came in lower than expected and cattle on feed were also slightly lower than expected. However, I don't see this report having much of an effect on the cattle markets as we get rolling here this morning.
They miss the placements every month. The cattle on feed number that was slightly lower than expected is probably the more important number. I pulled up a weekly cattle chart. This has been a very orderly uptrend from the COVID low. This is a regression channel on my screen. And if you guys are chart nerds, this is only half a standard deviation on either side of the regression line, which is a very tight orderly uptrend that's been in place for like the better part of 4 years now. So it's really been pretty impressive. What does the market do on the open today? I don't have a clue, but the report was, we'll call it supportive.
USDA reported multiple flash sales on Friday. U.S. exporters sold 9 million bushels of corn to Mexico. Of the total, 1 million bushels are for delivery during the current marketing year, and 8 million bushels are for delivery during the next marketing year. U.S. exporters also sold 4 million bushels of soybeans to unknown destinations. Of the total, 500,000 bushels are for delivery during the current marketing year, and the remaining 4 million bushels are for delivery during the next marketing year.
That could have been China starting its new crop soybean purchase campaign. I mentioned they had zero on the books. That's a possibility. Mexico has been the largest buyer of U.S. corn this year, and that probably continues into next year, barring some big shift in the narrative with China. What did cattle prices do on Friday?
So feeders were down an average of 57 cents on Friday, but they were an average of 682 higher week to week on Friday. Live cattle were an average of 12 cents higher on Friday and were an average of 420 higher week over week on Friday. Cash cattle trade was lower last week. In the South, cattle traded at 182, which was steady with the previous week. Up here in Nebraska, we saw cattle trade at 183, which was a buck lower for the week. And over in the Western Corn Belt, cattle traded at 184, which was also a dollar lower from the prior week. Box beef was also lower last week. Choice closed Friday at 295.67. That was down 490 for the week. And select ended Friday at 290.83. That was down 471 for the week.
May grain options expire on Friday, guys. If you have any positions there, make sure you take a look. Outside markets to start the week, U.S. dollars about flat. Stocks are up. S&P's up 28. The Dow's up 190. Bonds are off a little bit. Gold is down sharply. Crude oil is down 58 cents in the June WTI at 81.65. Everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.